Voices of Hope is a podcast of New Hope Presbyterian Church in Castle Rock, Colorado. You can listen to our sermons, interviews, and Pastor Pod on iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and any popular podcast platforms. Welcome to Pastor Pod, our first in a series of podcasts when Pastor Russ and I, Pastor Jordan, get together to give our best answers to your questions about the Bible, theology, and life. Please enjoy. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another Pastor Pod. Today, we're going to talk about or continue talking about original blessing and original sin. And I think one of the questions that comes up often is, if we take away original sin, then what did Jesus die on the cross for? And I think one of the things that many people don't know, and we've had this as a topic at Theology on Tap before, but there's all kinds of atonement theories of why Christ died on the cross, what Christ did on the cross, and what that accomplished. And so we have several different ones I just want to throw out there first, right, Russ?
Sure.
And then you're going to explain all of them.
Just impress us all.
There is the moral influence theory. And within this theory, the death of Christ is understood as a catalyst to reform society, inspiring humans to follow Christ's example and live good and moral lives of love. And then there's the ransom theory, that essentially the theory claimed that Adam and Eve sold humanity over to the devil at the time of the fall, hence justice required that God pay the devil a ransom.
By the way, that was one of the most, in the early days of Christianity, that was the most prevalent of the reasons. And when you read some of the early atonement work of why Jesus was on the cross, from people who are saints, the Cappadocian Fathers and some of those, and you read that, and you almost gasp anymore. But it was perfect for its time, given that's how people thought about the story and how they thought about Satan.
Yeah. And then there is Christus Victor, Christus Victor. Mm-hmm. And so this is widely considered to be dominant theory for most of historical Christian church. Jesus Christ dies in order to defeat the powers of evil, such as sin, death, and the devil, in order to free mankind from their bondage. Right? So that's...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it's kind Irenaeus, of... we had that one, and it was called, at that point, recapitulation. It was retelling the story. It was starting over again. And that Christ came to, as Paul said, to conquer sin, sickness, and finally the last enemy of humankind, death. And in so doing, he becomes the new Adam. He becomes the new beginning of humanity, and then, in a sense, rewrites the whole story behind him so that it all serves to this one moment.
So, and the next one is probably the most common one right now that people think of when we talk about Jesus dying on the cross.
Sure.
The penal substitution theory. So, Jesus dies to satisfy God's wrath against human sin.
Yep.
Jesus is punished in the place of sinners in order to satisfy the justice of God and the legal demand of God to punish sin. So God is angry, God has wrath, and now it's satisfied by Jesus' death.
Yeah.
That's
really been dominant for almost the last 1,000 years, even though it has morphed from its original form. But yeah, that's the one that we can talk about that.
Then there's the governmental theory. I'm not too familiar with this one, I don't think. It says it's a slight variation upon the penal substitution theory. Jesus Christ suffers the punishment of our sin and propitiates God's wrath. In this way, it's similar. However, Christ does not take the exact punishment we deserve. He takes a punishment. Jesus dies on the cross, therefore, to demonstrate the displeasure of God towards sin. He died to display God's wrath against sin and the high price which must be paid, but not to specifically satisfy that particular wrath. And this theory also teaches that Jesus died only for the church. And if you, by faith, are part of the church, you can take part in God's salvation, but people outside of that cannot.
So it's kind of like the worst of all worlds.
Yeah.
All you know is that God is really ticked at you, and there's not much you can do unless you somehow connect with the church. Now you have to appease God and the church. This is, I can see where this one came from.
So, and then the next one, this is probably the one I've started to gravitate more towards, and we'll talk more about like why all of these are even there, but
yeah.
The scapegoat theory. And so this theory moves away from the idea that Jesus died in order to act upon God or as a payment to the devil. Scapegoating, therefore, is considered to be a form of nonviolent atonement, in that Jesus is not a sacrifice, but a victim. There are many philosophical concepts that come up within this model, but in a general sense, we can say that Jesus Christ as the scapegoat means the following. Jesus is killed by a violent crowd. The violent crowd kills him believing that he is guilty, and Jesus is proven innocent as the true Son of God. The crowd is therefore deemed guilty. James Allison summarizes scapegoat theory like this. Christianity is a priestly religion which understands that it is God's overcoming of our violence by substituting himself for the victim of our typical sacrifices that opens up our being able to enjoy the fullness of creation as if death were not. So that's kind of a bad summary, I think, but
it starts in the Old Testament, right? I mean, with the very first atonement going on in the for the children of Israel is to have the scapegoat, the goat upon which all the sins of the nation were placed symbolically on and then banished into the desert. Yep. So therefore the sins were gone, and that was a way of showing God's grace, and it also met the human need for what do we do with this alienation and all the things we have done. So, I mean, that's where it started. And then Christ becomes the scapegoat upon whom we put all our sins so that we can live, and that God has made provisions for that for us. It's not for God. It's for ourselves.
Right. It's God saying, you love violence. Stop perpetrating that on each other.
Yeah.
Here I am. And this is done once and for all.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Be done with it.
Yep. So for people that are listening that haven't even heard of atonement theories or understood that there's different ideas out there of what Jesus did, why are these important, and why are they important to the conversation in terms of original sin and original blessing?
Yeah. So atonement gets to the very mystery of who we are, and there's a couple of things to note. One is that it did not exist in the English language as atonement. When Tyndale went to translate the Bible for the first time in English, he had to make up a word for what this biblical concept was, and so he came up with at-one-ment, this thing that brought God and humanity together. At-one-ment becomes atonement. And because of the way we have understood what God did, then atonement has taken on the meaning, the extra meaning of the, there's a price you have to pay, and you have a debt, and you have to satisfy the anger and the debt to God. But originally, the idea is this at-one-ment, because at the heart of the human condition is this alienation, is this sense of estrangement, is this feeling that somehow I'm not even comfortable in my own skin. There's this alienation between ourselves and the divine, with God. There's this alienation between ourselves and one another. How do we do that? And I think the multiplicity of images and metaphors that the Bible uses points to that this is a metaphor. This is something deep. It's kind of like a scapegoat. It's kind of like paying a price. It's kind of like Christ overcoming. And every time we do that, we're pointing to an aspect of the truth, but we're also saying it's bigger than any one metaphor. But behind it all is this sense, and what Rohr today calls oneing, it's that same motion. How is God putting this world together? How is God overcoming the alienation and the separation that typifies the human condition?
So then I think one thing that people should know about these atonement theories too is that there is biblical precedent for each one, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's what makes it so complicated, is that you can find pieces of each idea throughout the Bible. But I also think that speaks to the diversity of writers and people that God used to tell the story.
Right? Yeah.
So then, if we're all originally blessed, that we were made good, then why did Jesus have to die?
Well, I don't know if we were originally made good. We were originally blessed, and we were originally loved, and we are treasured, and that's what original blessing is. And so whether we get into moral guilt and all that, that's a different conversation maybe. The reason, let me start here. The reason Jesus had to die simply is because Jesus was born. Jesus became human, and the essence of humanity is mortal. You are going to die. As soon as Jesus was born, it was fated that Jesus was going to die, because that's what it meant to be human. When God incarnates, when God takes on flesh, when Jesus is the one who's the pure embodiment of what it means to be completely human, completely divine, because God is because Christ is completely human, he's going to die. He could have died anyway. But the fact that he ended up going to the cross was not because to satisfy anything of God, that somehow we needed God to try and change God's mind about who we are so that now we would be loved. It's to change our mind about God. It is that we were afraid of God. It is that we were estranged of God. It is that we were putting things between us and God. We were living our lives around idols. We were dividing one another because of our image of God. It was to show us who God is. Sometimes we change John 3:16 so that it says, "For God was so angry with the world that he sent his son," when in fact it says, "For God so loved." Jesus is the expression of God's love as a human. And because Jesus was human, he went through childhood, youth, adult. He went through all the stages. He was tempted, and he experienced the fullness of humanity, as it says in Hebrews. There's nothing that he didn't experience, so that we have someone who can empathize with us. We have a God who can empathize, and that God is with us. That's the first name of Jesus, Emmanuel. God is with us. That's the theme throughout the Old Testament. That's the theme of Jesus' life and his death. And Jesus died so that Jesus then could overcome death, resurrect, and, as Paul says, defeat all the enemies of sin and of sickness and of death. And that's why Jesus went to the cross.
All right. It's settled.
Settled.
No, settled. Yeah. Done.
Yeah. So no, I think part of it was to show just the alienation. And why did Jesus have to go to the cross? It wasn't that God needed Jesus to die an agonizing death, but we as humans, this is what happens, who we are. And it is not that the cross shows us just at our worst. We're so evil, wicked, mean, and nasty that we put Jesus to death. I love what Buechner says, Frederick Buechner, when he talks about the cross, and he says, the cross represents the two pillars of Western civilization. It represents Jewish piety and Roman law and order upon which we are built. And it wasn't at the worst, but at their best of humanity, at the best of Jewish piety, at the best of Roman law, both ended up demanding that Jesus go to the cross. And so the cross is to show the folly, not just of who we are at our worst, but no matter how much we try, we're going to get this thing wrong. Our ego gets in the way. Our fear gets in the way. Our pride gets in the way. Our need to control gets in the way. And Jesus ends up on the cross. And it is to break our hearts. It is to show God's heart. It is to bring us back. And it is therefore to show that that God reigns even still. So the earliest form of the gospel in the book of Acts, when you read it, is, so God sent God's Messiah, the one who's to bring the world back together again. You rejected God's Messiah and put him on a cross. But God rejected your rejection and raised him up from the dead again. And now what are you going to do? Repent, believe, get on what God is doing. And that's the earliest form of gospel writing and what the atonement, the at-one-ment of what God is doing. That no matter who we are at our worst and our best, we fall short, and we end up making a hash of things, and Christ comes, dies for us, because of us, with us, suffers all of those things, and then rises from the dead and is putting this world back together again.
Well, I think if you read and look at the story in a different way, you start to see that more of, instead of seeing that God is just trying to make people believe in God and to take over and gain power in the world.
Yeah.
But instead, what God has been trying to do all along is showing us, you don't need to do that. You don't need to do this or that to make me love you more or less. But, I mean, that's the whole story with the sacrifices and the rules in Leviticus, right? Mm-hmm. It was, back then, you didn't know if you were pleasing to God or not, because if the rains didn't fall, then maybe the gods were upset with you. And this God came along and said, here's what you can do. I'm going to give you a clear path.
Mm.
And then, even as that went on with the Israelites, and they constantly fell short, right?
Mm-hmm.
And tried to do things that they thought God would be pleased with them for, but God was not. Then Jesus comes along and God is saying once again, this is my love for you. You don't need to do these things that you think you need to do to please me.
Yeah. It's in the attempt to please and validate ourselves that we end up stepping across other humans. We create the gap between sacred and secular, and who's holy and who's profane and who's in and who's out. We create the religions that therefore make it okay to diminish other people. We create the governments that make it okay to kill other people. And so we because of this very image of God. Now, I will say, there's a part of the idea that we came to satisfy the debt of sin that is true to the human condition. That's how it came about. There is something in me that feels like I've done something wrong. I need to balance the scales. I need to do something. And I think so there's that part of it that works. It's one aspect of it. It's one of the things that's talked about in the New Testament. But when you make it the whole thing, then we've made a God way too small. We've made this petulant. We've made this angry God who's kind of a jerk, who would send his son to suffer mightily so that somehow his anger could be abated. And it's very conditional, and it's kind of this little tin pot potentate kind of a God in the sky that we wouldn't give 2 seconds to think about it in reality, in real life. But because we've been told that's the gospel, then we just have this religion that continues to try to appease. There's a part of it that works because there's a part of my human soul that understands that of balancing scales and something needs to be done. But it's such a small part, and it's just one aspect of the entire spectrum of all the ways the Bible's trying to tell us how God bridged the gap and how God is putting the world together, the oneing, the at-one-ment between God and humanity with itself.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us today, and we will see you next time. If you've enjoyed Voices of Hope, please rate and review us and share us with your friends. If you have questions for Pastor Pod, please email them to jordan@newhopeprez.org or send us a message on Facebook. Thank you to Wild Wonder for our theme song titled Behind the Veil. You can find Wild Wonder on soundstripe.com. Their genres include ambient, post-rock, cinematic, dream pop, and experimental. New Hope Summer Sunday Worship is at 10 a.m., please say hi if you join us, and we will see you next time.